Welcome to the Confluence Investment Management Geopolitical Biweekly Report for February 9th, 2026. I'm Phil Adler. A close look at changes taking place in U.S. foreign policy can be revealing from an investment standpoint. Recent changes have been sharp, but it's natural to question their staying power. Confluence Chief Market Strategist Patrick Fearon-Hernandez addresses this and related issues in his latest report today, comparing the new U.S. foreign policy versus the old. Patrick, you state that President Trump's muscular foreign policy aligns well with the new American populist aversion to free global trade and to our former role as the world's benefactor or policeman. Who were the big winners in this previous U.S. foreign policy, the one that has been supplanted?
Well, hi, Phil. Thanks for having me on the program. To answer your question, the old policy, in other words, the post-World War II hegemonic model, mainly benefited groups aligned with globalization and free capital flows. High-skill sectors, technology and finance, multinational corporations, and the defense industry all thrived. The system also benefited foreign partners who relied on U.S. security guarantees and access to the U.S. market. Meanwhile, the U.S. working class often paid the cost through deindustrialization and military deployments. So the winners tended to be globalized industries and higher income, higher educated segments of the U.S. economy.
And how do you break down the elements of President Trump's current support?
Well, his coalition is really broad. It includes groups that we've labeled as the tech bros, established wealthy Republicans, national security hawks, and the blue-collar, trade-skeptic working class. Some elite groups in Trump's coalition have shaped policy pretty well, but the coalition's political foundation is the large and energized working-class base. That's the group the administration cannot afford to alienate, so it drives much of the tone and direction of policy.
Well, if the working class is the key component of President Trump's coalition, it makes sense that his policies will try to ensure blue-collar workers' continued support. Now, exactly what part of the president's foreign policy is designed specifically with the working class in mind?
Well, the core idea is reindustrialization. The administration frames its hard power moves as bringing production back home, punishing countries seen as exploiting U.S. firms, and reducing reliance on long, costly overseas military commitments. The approach is marketed as restoring U.S. honor while protecting domestic jobs, especially industrial ones. Even short, decisive military actions are positioned in ways meant to reassure the working class that they won't be asked to shoulder the kinds of burdens associated with the Iraq or Afghanistan wars.
A key question is whether the Trump policies have succeeded so far in delivering actual wins for blue-collar workers, and if those wins are enough to support long-term investment decisions. What do you think?
Well, it's still early. The strategy could eventually support industrial jobs by opening markets for U.S. goods, securing critical minerals, and giving domestic producers more leverage. But several factors complicate the picture. For example, modern manufacturing creates fewer jobs per unit of output simply because people are so productive now. While localized supply chains are more expensive and higher costs can feed into inflation, there's also the risk that capital owners capture most of the benefits. So while the political alignment may persist, the economic results for workers will take time and may not be as large as hoped.
Patrick, let's go into this a little bit further. What are key challenges that stand in the way of this goal of creating more industrial jobs inside the United States?
Well, there are several obstacles. For example, there's the question of efficiency. Manufacturing is far more automated today, so even big increases in output may not translate into many new jobs. Then there's the question of cost. Producing in the U.S. with limited supply chain flexibility can raise costs and reduce competitiveness. Then there's the question of inflation. Higher production costs often mean more volatile and elevated prices. Of course, then there's the question of import. imports of inputs. So if the U.S. relies more on imported energy or critical materials, domestic producers may lose out. And then finally, there's that question of income distribution. Even with growth, higher income households may capture most of the gains. So considering these factors, we think the goal is achievable, but it's going to be challenging.
Do you think President Trump needs to be extra careful that his policies do not reward the high income at the expense of the working class?
Absolutely, not at the expense of the working class. His coalition requires credible benefits for working class households. If outcomes tilt too heavily toward high income or corporate interests, the political foundation of the foreign policy could weaken. The administration's messaging is strongly pro-worker, but over time, the results will need to reflect that as well.
One of the recent major investment trends has been a flight from the dollar and the pursuit of precious metals. We saw this begin to reverse just a bit on the day the president named his choice of Federal Reserve chief, which was a choice suggesting to some that interest rates might be slower to come down. But looking long term, is it wise to base current investment choices on the expectation that the dollar will continue its weakening trend?
You know, we think longer-term pressures do point toward a softer dollar, such as concerns about deficits, debt, inflation, and foreign reserve diversification. But the U.S. could also build a system that encourages countries to hold more dollars, which would put a floor under the currency. So, yes, the broad trend may be downward, but investors should expect volatility and avoid making one-way bets. For us, a weaker dollar is a theme, but it's not a guarantee.
Patrick, you describe the new U.S. foreign policy as one that supports many of the recent investment themes at Confluence. European stocks, particularly defense stocks, and precious metals, with bonds out of favor as inflation builds. You've also been enthusiastic lately about prospects for large U.S. companies with a lot of international business. But don't tariffs hurt prospects for those companies?
Well, tariffs do create headwinds, but the administration is also prioritizing U.S. corporate interests abroad, especially for large firms. So those companies may now have more U.S. government backing as they negotiate foreign regulations and market access. In some cases, the political leverage they gain may outweigh the costs imposed by tariffs. That's why we still see opportunity in well-run, globally active U.S. large caps, even in a tariff-heavy environment.
You also say that a current move toward more U.S. cooperation with China might help both U.S. and Chinese stocks in the long run. I think a lot of us might not be readily able to identify current examples of emerging cooperation. Can you help us?
What we're seeing isn't full-scale cooperation, but rather a temporary easing of tensions, a kind of tactical detente. For example, President Trump has approved sales of some advanced semiconductors to China, and the recent U.S. national security and national defense strategies have soft-pedaled their references to China. That's important because less confrontation can lower risk premia in both markets, giving U.S. and Chinese equities some breathing room. It doesn't change the long-term strategic rivalry, but markets respond to even short-term cooling-off periods.
You also identified Latin American stocks as beneficiaries of the new U.S. foreign policy. Is it time right now for investors to search for assets within countries like Chile or Bolivia, even Argentina, or should we wait for confirmation?
Well, there's plenty potential upside because countries aligning with U.S. priorities could gain preferential trade benefits. In addition, the U.S. government is likely to pressure them to adopt better economic policies, such as stronger protections for private property. But investors should look for signs that alignment is actually happening. There's also a long-term possibility that U.S. companies acquire the best firms in the region, leaving fewer high-quality local assets. So yes, opportunity is there, but patience and selective timing matter.
As we sum up here, Patrick, can you remind us now how Confluence has shaped current asset allocation recommendations to accommodate your foreign policy and your geopolitical outlook?
Well, sure, Phil. What we continue to favor would include, first of all, European stocks, especially defense, supported by rising spending and policy shifts. We also like precious metals, given geopolitical uncertainty and demand from investors and central banks. We like large-cap U.S. multinationals, which may benefit from policy support in foreign markets. We call for selective exposure to China during periods of reduced tension, and then we selectively have interest in Latin America, where alignment with U.S. policy could unlock opportunities. At the same time, we recommend underweighting bonds due to higher inflation and supply chain fragmentation. Overall, we see a world of more fracturing, more inflation pressure, and clearer winners and losers across regions and sectors.
Thank you, Patrick. The title of this week's report is U.S. Foreign Policy, Comparing the New versus the Old. And you can find a link to the written report on the Confluence webpage, confluenceinvestment.com. There are some interesting charts and tables in that report breaking down President Trump's political support and also trade and dollar histories. Our discussion today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. And this information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.